This is Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Singeri in for Bob Kinzel. Golf fans are in their glory this week. We've had some good weather to go out and play, if you got the right tee time. But they've also been able to wake up for the last couple of days and catch live coverage of the British Open from Royal Troon in Ayrshire, Scotland, while getting ready for work. Now, golf can be a tricky game to master. Every course vastly different with those water hazards and sand traps. A few years ago on Vermont Edition's Summer School, we tried to improve your game when we enlisted the help of golf professional Roger King to give us some tips on putting.
Usually what we'll do is we'll put the ball just across from our left instep, and then when you line your putter up, all you try to do is you try to get the grip and the putter head and have them move back in the same direction and through in the same direction. What that's going to do is that's going to keep the face of the putter straighter, longer. It just moves together, nice and smooth and even. So that's what we're looking to do. Game's easy.
That's Roger King now, head golf professional at Sugarbush Golf Club, helping us shave a few strokes off our game. Today on the show, we're going to have a look at golf around the state. We'll hear about some of the courses to play, and we'll discuss why the number of golfers has been declining. Listeners, we want to hear from you about your experience with the game in Vermont. What do you enjoy about it? What would make it better for you? You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 800-639-2211. Or you can email your thoughts to vermontedition@vpr.net. Joining us now are Austin Danforth. He's a sports reporter for the Burlington Free Press, and Zach Wyman. He's general manager and director of golf at Vermont National Country Club in South Burlington. Welcome to both of you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, so let's get a picture of what golf is like in Vermont. Zach, we'll start with you. Kind of just give an overview of what you know about golf in the state.
Well, first off, we have some amazing golf courses. Public golf course around the state is awesome. There's a lot of really, really good golf courses. Private golf in the same boat. Really, really good golf courses. And just a complete difference from north to south also, and everything in between. It's you get everything from farmland type golf courses to mountains to you know, you name it. It is out there for your ability level and enjoyability level and price point too. There's everywhere from probably $9 golf courses out there, everywhere up to $125, $145 green fees. So if you want to play, you can find a place.
Austin Danforth, you started as a caddy. You know, you're covering it with the Free Press. So tell us what you see around the state.
Well, one big thing that's jumped out to me, in the last 15 years since I started playing, and then growing up and caddying and working at golf courses, and now covering the sport, is I think the top end of competitive youth players, the type of players the state's producing, has increased in both quantity and quality. I haven't crunched the numbers from sport to sport, but I'm pretty confident that Vermont as a state produces the most Division I college athletes in the sport of golf than just about any other sport. I mean, definitely more than basketball, football, baseball. There's usually one or two kids a year coming out of high school that land on a Division I caliber team, and I think that's a big departure from 20, 25 years ago, where there were every 3 or 4 years there was some great kid coming out. But now I think like just last year you had two kids, Drake Hull from Rutland and Troy Evans from Barry. They both landed on competitive, very competitive Division I teams. A few years back, a guy many people will know who's my age, I competed against in high school, Keegan Bradley. He sort of took off well after high school. But I think that's one of the most interesting things about golf in Vermont, that it's, even with the winter and not being able to play for 5 or 6 months, the enthusiasm is there and the talent is growing at the youth ranks.
Zach, do people have enough time to play golf in this state? There's only, 6 months to get people out on your course?
They seem to. They seem to be able to carve out enough time. But it is. It's tough. We have not only spring is tough, fall is tough. Summer, you get the summer storms. So, but it doesn't seem to keep people from finding time to play golf. And if it's sneaking out of work early in the summer or just finding time in the afternoons. I mean, what's nice is it's light till 9 o'clock, so you can get off work and still get in 18 holes. People find time.
Well, Austin, you gave us very good news about the high school students that are, you know, going on to play on in golf programs around the country. But, you know, there are some concerning numbers. The Vermont Golf Association shown a dramatic drop in participants based on how they track golfers. So tell us about their findings and why you think that's the case.
Yeah, I just a couple of days ago, I was speaking to someone from the VGA who said, you know, in the last 10 or 12 years, the number of golfers in their registered handicapping system has dropped, I think, from 12,000 to 9,000. And granted, that's a portion of the golfing population in the state, but you might say that's like the most diehard portion of the golfing populace. That you know, and that's a 25% drop. And you might think credit some of it to the economic downturn if people aren't, you know, members at as many places. I mean, some people have memberships at two or three places, some just one, some not at all. So you think that probably factored into it, because that was a pretty defining piece of the last decade. But it might be that. It might be people got into golf and they fell out of golf for whatever reason, whether they had kids or they got older. It could be Vermont's population, we all know, is much grayer than most states. So it could be, you know, people just sort of dropped off the game because they you know, physically, you know, aren't up to the task. But I was really surprised when I heard that number, you know, that 25% drop in handicapped players. So,
well, the national numbers are down, too. In the last decade, participation has dropped in the country by about 20%, been flat over the last couple of years. Zach, is the game in trouble?
We're trying to not let it be. The PGA is obviously trying to stay ahead of the curve. We're trying to build more golfers. You know, back in the 90s, when it was the Tiger Woods era, and a lot of people came out to play. It was a very exciting time. We were building golf courses like there was no end. You'd build a golf course and you'd have 500 people show up. We probably got ahead of ourselves, and now there's an industry correction, and it kind of needs to happen. We're seeing it locally already, but I think nationally you'll start seeing it more and more and more, and I think that the amount of golf courses will then readjust to the amount of golfers. But with the junior programs that we're starting, with the junior PGA Junior League, it's an outstanding way to get people on the golf course. We have a lot of people that practice and learn the game, but getting them to the golf course is really the next step, and that really is where our focus is moving forward.
Listeners, you can join the conversation today about golf. What do you love about this exacting, exasperating game? Does it coincide with a new putting stroke or a fairway wood that's cut a few strokes off your game? Or has your interest in golf waned, and why? You can share your thoughts. Call 1-800-639-2211, or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Austin, let's kind of look at the positive in, you know, what's going on in Vermont. I mean, are there some great places to play the game here in the state?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm standing on one right now. I'm looking at the Green Mountains to the east and the Green Mountains to the west, or actually, I think because it's on the other side of Route 7, it's the Taconics. But I'm about to go play Proctor Pittsford in Rutland County with my dad and a couple people. And, you know, it's gorgeous. It's blue sky, green grass, green trees, and 360 degrees. So I'm pretty happy where I am right now. But, yeah, you can get classic old places. You know, Rutland Country Club down here just a couple miles away. It's one of the best, you know, toughest, you know, yard for yard places to play in Vermont. It's got maybe the toughest greens in the state.
And Zach, what's that? Zach Wyman, when you get off your course, Vermont National, where do you like to play in the state?
I love Country Club of Barry. The views are absolutely phenomenal. I love Okemo Valley, one of my favorite places. But there's hidden gems everywhere. Proctor Pittsford's one of them. It's a really, really neat golf course. But there's, you know, at Jay Peak, I mean, there's places all over the state that are really, really good. And, you know, I like playing everywhere because it's one of those things that you get out there and there's always something that catches your eye or catches your how you play the game, and you go, that's a really cool design feature. That's just, it's just a beautiful place. And like Austin said, the views around the state are phenomenal.
Now, this game is exasperating. So first you, Austin, I mean, why do you love it? What gets you back out there, even if you go and shoot around in the 90s, or in my case, in the hundreds?
Hopefully I'm not shooting in the 90s today. But for me, it's, you know, I used to play a lot more when I was younger and in college. And since college, I probably play half as much as I used to or even less. But it's just trying, you know, self-improvement, and for me, trying to get back to, you know, maybe where I was when I was at my peak as a golfer. But I'm playing in a member guest next weekend with my dad, and that's always a fun thing to look forward to every summer. I try and get my game in as good shape as I can, just because the sense of competition, and you get out there, you're grinding in a match play format, and you know, you need to be locked in because maybe your partner's in trouble, and just you're trying to tap into, you know, maybe the best parts of my game. And you know, it's really, like you said, it's exasperating, because you know, I could get out there and not hit my driver well at all, but still try and figure out a way to score, because there's a lot of ways you can make par, and that's one of the cool things, that you don't have to be perfect at all times to match someone who might be.
And Zach, what do you love about it?
The challenge day in, day out is there's nothing like it. Once you reach a level, you want to get to the next level. Once you reach that level, you want to get to the next level. And it makes you try harder, and it makes you look at every aspect of your game. There's no one piece that can be mediocre. It's all got to be good. And if you put, like Austin said, your putting's good one day, your irons might be cruddy. So it's a never-ending battle of trying to get better.
So we're talking about golf today in Vermont. Austin Danforth, sports reporter for the Burlington Free Press. You've got that tee time with your dad, so we're going to let you leave now. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Good talking with you.
All right, take care. But Zach Wyman, who is the 2016 New England PGA Professional of the Year, will stay with us. And just ahead, we'll be joined by Chris Daly. He's the head pro at Middlebury College's Ralph Meyer Golf Course. And listeners, you can chime in with your thoughts on golf in Vermont by calling 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Rick Zingari, and this is Vermont Edition. We're getting a feel for what's going on with the game of golf in Vermont. We're discussing why participation is dropping in some circles and what can be done to introduce new people to the game. Listeners, we want to hear from you, get your take on the sport. When and how were you introduced to golf? What gets you out there for an early morning tee time? Call us at 1-800-639-2211, or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Zach Wyman is here. He's general manager and director of golf at Vermont National Country Club in South Burlington. And now we're joined by Chris Daly. He's head golf professional at Middlebury College's Ralph Meyer Golf Course. Welcome, Chris.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Now, you came to the game kind of late in your life. Tell us when and how you picked up golf.
Well, my golf started when I was in my early 20s. I grew up with a golf course in my hometown and never really knew what it was, but I played a lot of other sports, and as I got out of that, I needed another kind of outlet for my competitive side, and golf was something you could practice by yourself or with other people, and it really just, you know, I got the bug and haven't lost it.
Is there an advantage to picking up the game later in life? You don't have, you know, some of the crutches that come into the swings that we have?
I actually think it's more advantageous when you're young. You just have no fear, and you just swing freely, don't have any thoughts of negativity, and what I've seen, others have done that too. I mean, when you pick it up when you retire, you think you'll have all this time, but in a way, your physical stature is a little less, so it makes it harder.
So I want to ask you both how we accomplish that. How do you get young people, new people into the game? Zach Wyman, what do you do at Vermont National?
We run a ton of junior programs, from kids camps, which is basically golf, tennis, swimming, just fun, just to introduce them to our junior golf schools, which are basically all day events, and then transition them to the PGA Junior League, which is actually matches, where they play a two-person scramble. And then we basically send them out and start playing in Vermont PGA golf events in the junior program. So really, the quicker we get our hands on them, the longer they stay. And the more success they have early, the better chance they have staying also. It's the same thing with adult golf. If you can get them to get the ball in the hole, you got them. If you get them to hit one good shot, you got them. And it's cultivating that as often as possible. And making the golf course less intimidating, more fun to be at, all of those things, which, you know, those are the barriers that we've hit for years and years and years. You know, golf is this or that or the other thing. It's, for most now, it's fun. And make it fun.
Well, we've talked about participation numbers dropping. It's actually the reverse at Vermont National Country Club. So how have you been able to do that? How have you been able to get the numbers up?
We try to reinvent ourselves as often as possible and stay ahead of the curve. And we have to be more things to more people. Golf now is one segment of the country club world. It's tennis. It's swimming. It's concerts. It's wine and painting parties. It's whole family activities. It's less about how many rounds we play and more about how many visits we get to the club. And the more often they come, the more the food program we have, and the more they're there, the more relaxed they become, and the more often they want to be there. Golf is a part of it. So if it's just going to the driving range, if it's just going to the chipping green, if it's, you know, going to one of our clinics, whatever it is, it's getting those people to their club more often.
All right, we've got a number of listeners who want to join in. So let's go to Lisa in Norwich. Lisa, thanks for calling Vermont Edition.
Hey, thanks for having such a great show. I just wanted to say that golf has been my favorite sport my entire life. My dad cut down my first set of clubs when I was six, and it's a great sport for kids, and you learn respect and outdoors, and there's so much to it. And right when my kids were born, I've played all my life, and then when my kids were born, and they were a few years old, I made it a point to join a course and train all winter. And I trained for the two statewide women's tournaments. And one of them actually was at Middlebury. And I hadn't played that course before. And that was, like, four of the best days of my life, I've got to say. Like, away from my family, no kids to worry about, and I got to live, breathe, and walk golf all day long for 4 days. It was heaven.
Lisa, do you get to play much now?
I came home with a trophy, and I had a great time, but after that, you know, the deal is I've got kids, and they're my main focus, and taking them to their sports is my main focus. And since they didn't want to play golf because their friends weren't playing golf, it's not the sport I'm teaching them the way my dad taught me. And it's a bummer, but they are who they are, you know, and I want to support them. And I know I'll get back to it, but it's killing me every year that I don't – I used to have my clubs in the car all summer long. All spring and fall long too, and they're in the closet, and it's breaking my heart. And, you know, it's really hard. Once you're in love with this game, man, there's no getting it out of your system. But I just have to put it aside until my kids are out of the house.
Well, Lisa, you've got two golf professionals who are weeping openly. So, Chris Daly, when you hear a call like that, when you talk to someone who has gotten away from the game, you know, what can you offer them? How can you get them back into the sport?
Well, that is the number one roadblock we hear of every day is too little time and too much to do. We're trying to do things just like Vermont National, trying to make everybody more comfortable at the course and trying to have alternatives to the 4 or 5 hour round. We have much more 9-hole rounds than 18-hole rounds at our club, and that's a definite reflection of people having little time to do it. I would try to tell people that, you know, golf doesn't have to be an all-day event. You can come by for an hour and just play as much as you can, either at the practice range or just a couple holes on the golf course.
That's right. Great point. All right, let's take Paul in Bennington. Paul, thanks so much for calling Vermont Edition. Paul, you with us?
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm from Bennington. I just want to make a comment that I feel a little outpriced in the sport. Years ago when I played in high school, they would give you free passes, and when you get kicked out, you got to go to the membership level. And my coworkers and I love to play, but we don't get to go as much. And I know you can play the, you know, the $9 whole rounds, but versus the $70 experience and plus, you do not get the same experience and practice.
Excellent point. I want both of you to answer this. Zach, we'll start with you. How do people get over that price hurdle?
That's one of the toughest things. Running a golf course is expensive. There's no two ways about it. It is a hurdle, but people find a way. If you want to get on the golf course, you can do it. We have memberships basically from birth to death, and they go up in incremental as you get older and get more money, the membership goes up. So it's finding the place that's right for you first off, that also makes financial sense. There are deals out there. There are places that, you know, you can get $400 and $500 memberships for the year. And they're good golf courses. The whole experience part of it you may not get, you know, the bag service and the cleaning the clubs and the great driving range and all that stuff, but you're out playing golf. And that's what it is. It's keeping the people involved one way or the other. And there's just no way around it. I wish golf could be free for everybody, but it's not a cheap business to be in by any means.
Chris Daly, what goes on at Ralph Meyer Golf Club that can get people in playing for, you know, an affordable day of golf?
Well, we kind of fashion ourselves as one of the lower cost alternatives. We're open to the public, and we offer seasonal memberships, but we haven't increased our rates in 5 years, and we also have like a national progressive membership structure where a junior pays $100 for the full year, unlimited golf, and goes all the way up to a young adult, which is $400, and the adult membership is only $8. So we also offer late afternoon rates, our twilight fees, we call them, which are half price. We try and make the whole experience worth it. And as far as, you know, compared to other sports like skiing, you can get an all-day ski pass for $80 or $100. And some people believe like an 18-hole round is all. But our structure is a greens fee, which is good for the whole day. So at $40, we actually have a much better value for the whole day of golf.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the lowest end of golf in the state, and that's in Newark. It's Granddad's Invitational Course. You drive up, you put $5 in the slot, you take a scorecard, and you can play 9 holes. But we also heard from Spencer in Waitsfield. He invited us to check out the website of Woodchuck Golf, and on the site they describe it as a backyard 6-hole course in Waitsfield. You will need a sense of humor to make it all the way around. There are 4 par 3 holes, 2 par 4 holes, none of which are easy. The course record is 2 over par 22, and one of the unusual hazards is a burn pile. So there are all levels of golf in the state. Hey, Pat is calling in from Shelburne. Let's talk to Pat. How are you, Pat?
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I am not a golfer. I'm the wife of a senior citizen. And when the program started, I said, yeah, the problem is you can't afford to play anymore. It's too expensive, but I'm finding your program addressing this. So I'm going to tell him to get out there and do his homework to find a cheaper course. But my main concern as a person is the association worldwide addressing the water consumption and the chemicals that we use to keep the beautiful greens that therefore make you money. Yep. But I'm concerned with the runoff, and I appreciate you addressing this chemical and water consumption to keep the sport.
Great.
How can we reduce and yet let everyone enjoy the sport and you make money? Thank you for taking my call. Love the program.
Yep. And, Pat, you're not alone. We also heard from Katie. She posted on Facebook, And she said, I hope that your guests can address the environmental ramifications of the landscaping of golf courses. Maintaining that grass with mountains of fertilizer can be no good for our lake. So let's talk. Let's get an answer from both of you. We'll start with you, Zach Wyman.
I can actually put more chemicals on my lawn at home than we can put on our golf course at the club. The regulations put forth by the EPA for golf courses are the strictest anywhere. My superintendent actually has had to go to get permitted to use the chemicals we do use, which you would be amazed at how few there are. As far as the water consumption is concerned, we reclaim almost 90%. So anything that comes off the golf course goes back into our ponds. We are not on city water. We have all of our own ponds, and that's pretty much throughout the state. Most of the clubs at this point now have their own ponds, retention ponds. So really the water that we use is all ours. Goes on the golf course, comes back off. Any rainwater we get goes into our ponds and it fills them up. So really, you know, the ecosystem for the golf course is minimal. You'll have more chemicals put on your lawn through ChemLawn or one of those other companies than we can put on our golf course.
Chris Daly, your points on this at the Ralph Meyer Golf Club?
Yeah, we're similar to Zach and his course, where, you know, we use only eco-friendly pesticides and fungicides, and we also use reclaimed water in our ponds. And, you know, water is it's a necessary evil to kind of keep it green. But again, we don't use any more than would have fallen normally, you know, Mother Nature providing.
All right. Chris Daly, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. You're in Maine enjoying the holidays, so have fun, and we'll continue with Zach Wyman. Take care, Chris.
Thanks.
Take care, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's take another call from Jim in Shelburne. Jim, thanks so much for calling Vermont Edition. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I turned in when you asked why do you play golf. It's the funnest thing there is. Every golf course, I don't care if it's a private fancy country club or a municipal course, they have the most beautiful views of anywhere. I haven't golfed in a course in the state that isn't just beautiful. So that's one reason. The camaraderie you get with friends when you go out and play 18 holes of golf is just, you can't, as the commercial says, it's priceless. And why you keep going back? Those four or five shots in a round that you hit the sweet spot, you bring it close to the pin, you make a putt, whatever it is, you talk about it for 4 days. And it's just a fun sport. My dad taught me the game when I was young. I taught my son the game when he was young. So we've got that part of it. There's so many aspects of golf that's a riot.
All right.
As far as the affordability goes, there are value cards out there, different deals like that. That's how I afford it. I haven't had a morning tea time. That is the one stipulation. You can't go out before noon with the cards and stuff. But who cares? You just lather up with the sunscreen and go out and have a blast.
Well, there are these jump-on-it deals, et cetera. Do they hurt the golf club? Is it a great way to introduce people to a golf club? What do you think, Zach?
All of the above. If you have open tea times and you can fill them with discounted rates, great. It's, you know, it's another way to get more people on your golf course. It's another way to get more people acclimated to the sport. So, and to Jim's point, the camaraderie of the game is really what it's all about. It's going out with friends for 3-4 hours away from cell phones and work and just having a good time. And if you're playing, I have twin 9-year-old daughters, so when I get a chance to go out and play with them, just the three of us in a cart riding around and laughing and having fun, there's nothing better. My best times ever growing up were with my family on the golf course. My mother, my grandmother, my grandfather, those were the best times, and that's what this game's all about.
Well, to that point, let's hear from Chris. He's calling from Burlington. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling Vermont Edition.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually appreciating what was just said. The reason I'm calling in is I really think there needs to be more of a reach out to get the youth involved in the game. You know, I've been playing golf maybe for 15 years or so now. And don't get me wrong, it is the most frustrating, you know, agonizing thing I do. But I always go out and do it. In fact, I'm going to play this afternoon after work. But, you know, I have an 8-year-old son. And, you know, just to, like, I'm going to go to Catamount in Williston. and, you know, which is a great course. And it's affordable, and, you know, they're always very cordial and they're nice, and, you know, they let him hop on the cart, and, you know, we don't hold anyone off, but, you know, he jumps out and he takes a few whacks, and, you know, just to get the youth involved, I think, is what really, that's what we need to, you know, to sustain the, you know, the energy of the game, so to speak. And I think that there's places out there that, you know, will accommodate that. So I really like to, you know, I'm not a great golfer by any means, you know, the PGA is not knocking on my door, but just get out there and play it. And like has been said countless times, it's, you know, you take a few hours out of your day and you enjoy the scenery and you have good shots, you have bad shots, and you laugh and ha ha and high five and have a couple beers or whatever. And you're out having a great time in this beautiful state that we live in. I think it's important to kind of gestate that, you know, the get the youth involved, you know, in order to germinate, you know, the interest in the game.
Great point, so. Chris. Thanks so much for calling. Now, I do want to talk about a couple of, I don't know, kind of dark clouds. Let's talk about Quinneaska Golf Club in Shelburne. Turned 50 years old last year, now looking to sell 9 of its 18 holes for real estate development. What does that tell us about the state of golf in Vermont?
Again, there's corrections. You have 4 or 5 of the same type golf courses around the area, and you just don't have that many golfers. So really, you know, one course changing up the way they do business, losing 9 holes, going close, whatever, it's only going to make the other one stronger, which is good and bad, I guess. But I'd rather have 4 really strong golf courses making a profit and making their golf courses better than 5 just all hanging on. So, you know, changes have to come. There has to be adjustments in the marketplace. And like I said before, we probably overbuilt, and now we're sort of, you know, reeling back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that we've heard about is some lifetime members who've paid, you know, once to play for free are now asked to send payment to help keep their club open. So you're hearing some of that as well.
Yeah, and those deals were made, you know, probably not in the smartest veins, and now it's coming back to haunt them. The golf courses, nothing's getting cheaper, as we know. Food's going up. Wages are going up. You can't do anything for free anymore. There's a cost associated with everything, and, you know, cost of living keeps going, and you can't – if you got in one point and you're not paying anything now, it's going to come back to bite you.
Yep, good point. That's Zach Wyman. He is the general manager and director of golf at Vermont National Country Club in South Burlington, and he's the 2016 New England PGA Professional of the Year. Want to congratulate you and thank you for being here today.
Thanks,
Zach. And it's Vermont. So the weather is wild, wacky, and unpredictable. Coming up, Andrew LeCanto of the National Weather Service will join us to make some sense of it. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Singeri in for Bob Kinzel. I hope you haven't got caught out in the downpours we've had in the last couple days in a lot of parts of Vermont. The weather has been volatile, hot and muggy, then pouring rain. And we've already experienced several 90-plus degree days in parts of the state that have left us all sweating and looking for the nearest swimming hole. So here to talk to us about these weather patterns and what's been leading to them and these weather conditions is Andrew LeCanto. He's a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Burlington. I want to thank you for joining us, Andrew.
Thank you very much for having me on. Good afternoon, everybody.
So have we had more warm weather days than normal in Vermont this summer?
Yeah, we have. We've had here in the Burlington area, we've recorded 8 days of 90 degree temperatures or above. And the interesting thing about that is, as most of us know, growing up in New England and here in Vermont, certainly when we get the really warm temperatures, it's usually accompanied by those kind of days where it's really humid. And really for much of those 90 degree days, except just recently, it's been a dry heat. It really hasn't been that kind of, it's been certainly hot,
but not as humid and hazy as normally.
Yeah, exactly. It's been more of a dry heat. And that's,
so we hear about dry heat in places like the Southwest. Tucson's been getting nailed in Phoenix with very high temperatures and that dry heat. So how do we get dry heat instead of the humidity that we normally have?
We've actually been in dry conditions recently. We haven't had a lot of rain. And that's kind of a feedback with temperatures is that if the soils are really dry, often the temperatures are warmer. They're not we're not really getting into a weather pattern that would bring up, you know, really tropical moisture, which we typically see with these kind of heat waves, mm-hmm. so to speak.
So we're not really built for having those 90-plus temperatures like places in the Sun Belt. Do you have some safety precautions about when the heat rises that you want people to know about?
Yeah, Rick, that's a good point, is that, you know, this area certainly has – it's a little bit more vulnerable to heat just because there are so many you know, places around here that don't have air conditioning.
We know how to handle the snow.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. But, yeah, as far as heat goes, the best thing you can do is take frequent breaks, make sure that you're hydrated, and especially take breaks in areas where there is some air conditioning. Places like malls, recreational centers, movie theaters as well, places that are really air-conditioned. You want to take as frequent breaks as you can. Try to stay in the shade as often as you can. In some occupations, that's difficult, but you certainly want to do that because take as many breaks as you can, because, you know, otherwise you'll start to suffer from different heat-related illnesses, and we don't want to see that happen.
Has the weather been unusually up and down, hot and cold, rather than more stable?
Yeah, it's, you know, certainly our area compared to many places in the country tends to experience more changeable weather, especially in the summertime. The weather patterns, we usually get warm, and but we also have periods of cooler, refreshing weather. And, you know, certainly compared to areas like the South where it's hot and dry all the time and hot and humid all the time in the summer. Here it's a little bit more changeable. We have more, you know, storms can be a little bit stronger here, but certainly the weather has been more up and down. That's typical for a Vermont summer.
This has been my 14th summer in Vermont, and what I've noticed is rarely are two the same. I can remember an entire summer with highs that were mostly in the 60s and rainy most every day. So why are our summers so random?
Oh, that's a good question. you know, a lot of it has to do with just sort of natural, just variability. Certainly in the summertime, the kind of the characteristic weather pattern that sets up is the South has what we call a large area of higher pressure. And that just, you know, up to the north, we have, you know, certainly more of a jet stream. And that tends to introduce more cloudy weather, more, you know, oftentimes more storm systems that move across our area. So we tend to see more of a gradient in temperatures than, say, areas in the South and the Central Plains do.
So one of the things, yeah, that you look at is those weather patterns that we experience from other parts of the world. What do you see from elsewhere that's affecting us now and normally in our weather patterns here?
Yeah. Well, normally we do get surges of hot weather. That does happen here. As you know, sometimes we tend to laugh off the heat, but it does happen here.
Yep.
But you know, typically, you know, the pattern we're in right now is actually more typical of summer, where it's, you know, the South tends to get warm. The southern tier of the U.S. tends to get warm. And here in the north, we see a little bit more in the way of more moderate temperatures, occasional surges of humidity. There's no question about that. And certainly these past couple days, we've certainly seen that. But that's typically the kind of pattern that the pattern we're in now, where we have the high pressure to the south of us, and it's really hot, really, you know, really humid to our south. Occasionally that does make its way north. And certainly you've seen that the past couple days.
And what are we going to see coming up this weekend?
Well, finally, we got a nice break from the heat and humidity. Coming really later this evening and into tomorrow, you should start to see a real drop-off in the real sticky kind of air mass we've been stuck in. More refreshing temperatures for the weekend. Highs pretty much in the 80s, but also very comfortable humidity levels. Going into later in the weekend, and especially Monday and into Tuesday, we'll have to watch for some storms that will come, you know, from the west. Some of those could be strong. We'll have to look at that in the next couple of days, certainly for sure. But certainly for your weekend, it should be great conditions. You know, good to get outside, comfortable humidities, highs in the 80s, lows in the, you know, 50s to the upper 40s in some of the cooler valleys. But it overall, it should be much, much, much nicer than the past few days.
And what can you tell us about the rest of our summer?
Yeah, it should be essentially more of the same. You know, we'll have You know, periodic surges of warm temperatures, but, you know, a couple days in between of, you know, cool, refreshing, kind of, you know, cool, refreshing Canadian air masses that, you know, tend to give us kind of a nature's own air conditioning, so to speak.
We love when you say Canadian air masses, because that means it's got to be more comfortable at this time of year, correct?
Yeah, it's kind of a different story in winter, because usually in the winter we get really cold when you get when that happens, but certainly in the summertime we... The Canadian air masses are, you know, definitely a boon around here for sure.
Are you originally from Vermont?
No, I'm actually I'm from Massachusetts, from the Worcester area originally. Mm-hmm. I lived here for about 5 years, just you know, working for the Weather Service, and it's been great.
And what is it that got you to become a meteorologist? What was the interest?
You know, it's funny, if you interview any meteorologist, there's usually one they have one. Event or one storm that really triggered it for me. Just growing up in Worcester, just the frequent nor'easters we get, you know, that certainly pushed me to go. And you know, I certainly have an interest in in thunderstorms too, so that kind of those two things really kind of pushed me.
And how much longer are the winters that you experience here than you did in Worcester growing up?
Oh god, they're, you know, it seems like it's at least one or two more months longer.
Can we quote you on that? I mean, is that an actual figure that the National Weather Service has found from research?
No, that's not something I would recommend you quote me on, but it's my perception anyway.
I gotcha. Andrew Lecanto is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Burlington. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rick.
And we love getting your listener comments about the topics we cover on Vermont Edition. On Tuesday, a lot of folks had a lot to say about the question of why Vermonters do and don't choose to have kids. Our executive producer, Patty Daniels, joins me to share some of your observations. Hello, Patty.
Hey, Rick. So you'll remember the premise of the discussion on Tuesday was Vermont's low birth rate. And while the birth rate in the United States in general is the lowest that it's ever been, Vermont's is even lower. Last year, nearly 6,000 babies were born in Vermont, and that's actually the lowest number since the mid-1800s. And we asked you, why is that? And here are some of your responses.
Sarah is 25 and says, my parents already had me when they were my age. They always had such vivacity in their time spent with me. Part of me wishes to give that kind of energy to my own children. Another part of me recognizes that I have so many of my own needs to meet before I'm ready for children. So there's the rub. Am I the young parent who gives up my dreams for my children? Or am I the old parent who doesn't have as much physical and mental energy to devote to them?
Well, we have two contrasting points of view about the environmental impact of the population. Nancy says, the population of the planet needs to stabilize if we want to survive. Population naturally declines when women are educated. And if, in addition, we are free and safe, then we can save the planet. Immigration can make up for lower population growth in any part of the world. I have no children by choice, and I never regretted this decision.
But Russ from Thetford says, I'm a father and couldn't think of my life without having my son and my wife. Thinking about the carbon footprint is just a cover-up for a selfish thing.
Finances were the main theme in this conversation, though Steve points out, the impact on women's income potential around having children is so large. If you choose to have a child as a woman, you lose huge earning potential.
And we have two perspectives on not having kids. First, from Christine, she writes, what has not been mentioned so far is how hard it is to be a woman who doesn't have kids. People ask you all the time about it. You never see your friends, and it can feel like you've disregarded something that is supposed to be a rite of passage. The cult of motherhood can make one feel pretty awful.
And Emerald writes, what I'm seeing in my peer group of 30-somethings is fewer couples having kids. That includes ones who are married and own homes. They don't want to be tied down. They want to be free to travel. I think the no-kids family has lost its taboo. In the 80s and earlier, if you didn't have kids, that was odd. But now, families come in all shapes and sizes, and I don't think people view kids as cornerstones anymore.
And amidst our conversation about the cost and stress and stigma, Ruth points out, wow, I have not heard the word love from anyone. The joy of children and the love is not measured in dollars and cents.
Well, get in touch with us early and often. We love hearing your comments. You can write to VermontEdition@vpr.net. And that includes getting in touch with us in advance of Monday's show. We're going to revisit the controversial natural gas pipeline that's under construction in Addison County. We know many of you have strong feelings about the cost overruns and the environmental concerns. Meanwhile, others are counting on the project's potential economic benefits to the region. So we're going to get an update on all of these things Monday on Vermont Edition.
Thanks, Patty.
You're welcome.
Vermont Edition is produced by Sam Gale Rosen and Meg Malone, with production assistance from Jake Burstein. Mary Williams directed the program, and Patty Daniels is our executive producer. I'm Rick Singeri. Have a great weekend.